Hello again. This is Mrs. English, and I will be reading to you today from Homer's Iliad. This is the Richmond Latimer translation of Homer's Iliad. I'll be reading from Book 22. In Book 22, we will see the duel of Hector and Achilles. This would be the climax of the book. This is what we've been working our way up to. Remember that at the end of Book 21, at the close of that book, the Trojans were all trying to get into the city. So along the city, the Trojans, who had run like fawns, those are of course young deer, dried the sweat off from their bodies and drank and slaked their thirst, leaning along the magnificent battlements. Meanwhile, the Achaeans, sloping their shields across their shoulders, came close to the rampart. But his deadly fate held Hector shackled, so that he stood fast in front of Ilion and the Scaean gates. Hector does not go inside. Now Phoebus Apollo spoke aloud to Pelion to Achilles. "Why, son of Peleus, do you keep after me in the speed of your feet?" Because remember, Apollo is disguised as Agnor. Now he speaks and will tell Achilles he's been tricked. "Why, son of Peleus, do you keep after me in the speed of your feet, being mortal while I am an immortal god? Even yet you have not seen that I am a god, but strain after me in your fury," whined him. "Now hard fighting with the Trojans, whom you stampeded, means nothing to you. They are crowded into the city, but you bent away here. You will never kill me. I am not one who is fated." And so Apollo makes fun of Achilles. He's chased him all the way to the river, and now finds he's chasing a god. Deeply vexed, Achilles of the swift feet spoke to him. "You've balked me, striker from afar, most malignant of all gods, when you turned me here away from the rampart, else many Trojans would have caught the soil in their teeth before they got back into Ilion. Right? I could have killed more. Now you've robbed me of great glory, Megacleos, and rescued these people lightly, since you have no retribution to fear thereafter." This is Achilles angry with Apollo. This is, of course, what does Achilles have a problem with? This is a problem with anger management. And what does he say? Line 20, "Else I would punish you if only the strength were in me." He spoke and stalked away, stomping off, against the city with high thoughts in mind and in tearing speed like a racehorse with his chariot who runs lightly as he pulls the chariot over the flat land. Such was the action of Achilles in feet and quick knees. The aged Priam was the first of all whose eyes saw him, line 25, as he swept across the flat land in full shining, like that star which comes in on the autumn and whose conspicuous brightness far outshines the stars that are numbered in the night's darkening, the star they give the name of Orion's dog, which is brightest among the stars, line 30, and yet is wrought as a sign of evil and brings on the great fever for unfortunate mortals. Such was the flare of the bronze that girt his chest in his running. Priam sees Achilles running. The old man groaned aloud, and with both hands high uplifted beat his head, and groaned amain, and spoke supplicating his beloved son, who there still in front of the gateway stood fast in determined fury to fight with Achilles. The old man, stretching his hands out, called pitifully to him, "Hector, beloved child, do not wait the attack of this man alone away from the others. You might encounter your destiny beaten down by Pelion, Achilles, since he's far stronger than you are, a hard man. I wish he were as a beloved of the immortal as loved by me. Soon he would lie dead, and the dogs and the vultures would eat him, and bitter sorrow so be taken from my heart. He has made me desolate of my sons, who were brave and many. He killed them or sold them away among the far-lying islands. Even now there are two sons, Lycaon and Polydorus, whom I cannot see among the Trojans pent up in the city. Sons, Lothae, a princess among women, bore to me. But if these are alive somewhere in the army, then I can set them free for bronze and gold. It is there inside, since Altes, the aged and renowned, gave much with his daughter. But if they are dead already, and gone down to the house of Hades, it is sorrow to our hearts who bore them, myself and their mother, but to the rest of the people, a sorrow that will be fleeting beside their sorrow for you, if you go down before Achilles. Come then inside the wall, my child, so that you can rescue the Trojans and the women of Troy, neither win the high glory for Peleus' son, and yourself be robbed of your very life. Oh, take pity on me, the unfortunate still alive, still sentient, but ill-starred, whom the father, Cronus' son, on the threshold of old age, will blast with hard fate, after I've looked upon evils and seen my sons destroyed, and my daughters dragged away captive, and the chambers of marriage wrecked, and the innocent children taken and dashed to the ground in the hatefulness of war, and the wives of my sons dragged off by the accursed hands of the Achaeans. Line 65. And myself last of all, my dogs in front of my doorway, will rip me raw after some man with stroke of the sharp bronze spear, or with spear cast, has torn the life out of my body. Those dogs I raised in my halls to be at my table, to guard my gates, will lap my blood in the savagery of their anger, and then lie down in my courts. For a young man all is decorous when he is cut down in battle and torn with the sharp bronze, and lies there dead. And though dead still, all that shows about him is beautiful. But when an old man is dead and down, and the dogs mutilate the gray head and the gray beard, and the parts that are secret, this, for all sad mortality, is the sight most pitiful. So the old man spoke, and in his hands, seizing his gray hairs, tore them from his head, but could not move the spirit in Hector. And, side by side with him, his mother in tears was mourning, and laid the fold of her bosom bare, and with one hand held out a breast, and wept her tears for him, and called to him in winged words, line 81. And this is something in classical antiquity that the woman would do. Clytemnestra will do this just before her son Orestes murders her. It's a way to say, I'm your mother. Everything in me knows I'm your mother. This is the woman who nursed you. This is her last ditch effort. And so she bears herself to him and wept for tears and called to him in winged words, line 81, Hector, my child, look upon these and obey and take pity on me. If ever I gave you the breast to quiet your sorrow, remember all these things, dear child, and from inside the wall beat off this grim man. Do not go out as champion against him, a hard one, for oh, if he kills you, I can no longer mourn you on the deathbed, sweet branch, O child of my bearing, nor can your generous wife mourn you. But a big way from us, beside the ships of the Argives, the running dogs will feed on you. So these two in tears, and with much supplication, called out, line 90, to their dear son, but could not move the spirit in Hector. But he awaited Achilles as he came on, gigantic. But, what was it like? As a snake waits for a man by his hole in the mountains, glutted with evil poisons, and the fell venom is got inside him, and coiled about the hole, he stares malignant. So Hector would not give ground, but kept unquenched the fury within him, and sloped his shining shield against the jut of the bastion. Deeply troubled, he spoke to his own great spirit. Ah me, if I go now inside the wall and the gateway, this is line 100, Polydamas will be first to put a reproach upon me. And of course, Polydamas is already dead. Since he tried to make me lead the Trojans inside the city, on that accursed night when brilliant Achilles rose up, and I would not obey him, but that would have been far better. And this, of course, is Hector's soliloquy. He's standing here talking to himself. Now, since by my own recklessness I've ruined my people, line 105, I feel shame before the Trojans and the Trojan women with trailing robes, that someone who is less of a man than I will say of me, Hector believed in his own strength and ruined his people. Thus they will speak. And as for me, it would be much better at that time to go against Achilles and slay him, and come back, or else be killed by him in glory in front of the city. Or, if again I set down my shield, massive in the middle, and my ponderous helm, and lean my spear up against the rampart, and go out as I am to meet Achilles the blameless, and promise to give back Helen, and with all her possessions, all those things that once in the hollow ships Alexandrus brought to Troy, and these were the beginning of the quarrel. All right, as Hector thinks aloud, we realize that Paris took more than just Helen, because now he's thinking he could go out and meet Achilles the blameless, and line 114, he could promise to give back Helen, he could promise to give back all her possessions, all those things that Alexandrus brought back to Troy, and these were the beginning of the quarrel. He doesn't say, and she was the beginning of the quarrel. and so Helen may have brought all types of things with her. Who knows? Line 117. To give these to Atreus' son to take away, and for the Achaeans also to divide up all that is hidden within the city, and take an oath thereafter for the Trojans in conclave not to hide anything away, but distribute all of it, as much as the lovely citadel keeps guarded within it. So this is what he's debating. Give Helen back, give everything she came with, give everything they have worth anything in Troy. Yet still, why does the heart within me debate on these things? I might go up to him, and he take no pity upon me, nor respect my position, but kill me naked so, without armor. Naked so means without armor, as if I were a woman, once I stripped my armor from me. There is no way any more from a tree or a rock to talk to him, gently whispering, like a young man and a young girl, in the way a young man and a young maiden whisper together. I can't go out and whisper to him nicely. But better to bring on the fight with him as soon as it may be. We shall see to which one the Olympian grants the glory. So he pondered, waiting. But Achilles was clothing upon him in the likeness of the Lord of Battles, the helm-shining warrior, and shaking from above his shoulder the dangerous Pelian ash spear. So Achilles is coming after him, holding at shoulder height or above his spear, shaking it, while the bronze that closed about him was shining like the flare of blazing fire or the sun in its rising. And the shivers took hold of Hector when he saw him, and he could no longer stand his ground there, but left the gates behind and fled, frightened. And Peleus' son went after him in the confidence of his quick feet. So Achilles takes out, running after Hector. What was it like? As when a hawk in the mountains, who moves lightest of things flying, makes his effortless swoop for a trembling dove, but she slips away, line 140, from beneath and flies, and he, shrill screaming, close after her, plunges for her again and again, heart furious to take her. So Achilles went straight for him in fury, but Hector fled away under the Trojan wall and moved his knees rapidly. They raced along by the watching point and the windy fig tree, always away from under the wall and along the wagon way, and came to the two sweet-running well springs. There are double springs of water that jet up, the springs of whirling Scamandrus. One of these runs hot water, and the steam on all sides of it rises as if from a fire that was burning inside it, line 150. But the other, in the summertime, runs water that is like hail, or chill snow or ice that forms from water. Beside these, in this place and close to them, are the washing hollows of stone and magnificent, where the wives of the Trojans and their lovely daughters washed the clothes to shining in the old days, when there was peace, before the coming of the sons of the Achaeans. They ran beside these, one escaping, the other after him. It was a great man who fled, but far better he who pursued him rapidly. Since here was no festal beast, no ox-hide they strove for these are prizes that are given men for their running. They're not running a race to win a festal beast or an ox-hide. Line 160. No, they ran for the life of Hector, breaker of horses. That's the prize in this race, for Hector to win his life, or for Achilles to win Hector's life. What was it like? As when about the turnposts, racing single-foot horses run at full speed, when a great prize is laid up for their winning, a tripod or a woman, and games for a man's funeral? So these two swept whirling about the city of Priam in the speed of their feet, while all the gods were looking upon them. So it is not just Priam and his wife who watch from the walls, it is also the gods who are spectators in this race for the life of Hector. First to speak among them was the father of gods and mortals. Ah me, this is a man beloved whom now my eyes watch being chased around the wall. My heart is mourning for Hector, who has burned in my honor many fine pieces of oxen on the peaks of Ida with all her folds, or again on the uttermost part of the citadel. But now the brilliant Achilles drives him in speed of his feet around the city of Priam. Come then, you immortals, take thought and take counsel, whether to rescue this man or whether to make him, for all his valor, go down under the hands of Achilles, the son of Peleus. So the gods are discussing, should we let Achilles catch him or should we not? Then in answer the goddess, gray-eyed Athena, spoke to him. Father of the shining bolt, dark-misted, what is this you said? Do you wish to bring back a man who is mortal, one long since doomed by his destiny, from ill-sounding death and release him? Do it then, but not all the rest of us gods shall approve you. Then Zeus, the gatherer of the clouds, spoke to her in answer. Tritigenia, we saw this form of Athena in Book 4, line 515. Dear daughter, do not lose heart, for I say this not in outright anger, and my meaning toward you is kindly. Act as your purpose would have you do, and hold back no longer. So he spoke and stirred on Athena, who was eager before this, and she went in a flash of speed down to the pinnacles of Olympus. So Athena rushes from Olympus. But swift Achilles kept unremittingly after Hector, chasing him, as a dog in the mountains. What was it like? As a dog in the mountains, who is flushed from his covert, a deer's fawn follows him through the folding ways and the valleys, and though the fawn crouched down under a bush and be hidden, he keeps running and noses him out until he comes on him. So Hector could not lose himself from swift-footed Pelion, Achilles. If ever he made a dash right on for the gates of Dardanus, to get quickly under the strong-built bastions, endeavoring that they from above with missiles thrown might somehow defend him, each time Achilles would get in front and force him to turn back into the plain. So several times Hector tried to get within the city, thinking people from the top could throw missiles, throw rocks and things at Achilles, to allow Hector to get inside, but each time Achilles gets in front of him and forces him to turn back. Into the plain, line 198, into the plain, and himself kept his flying course next to the city. As in a dream, a man is not able to follow one who runs from him, nor can the runner escape, nor the other pursue him. So he could not run him down in his speed, nor the other get clear. How then could Hector have escaped the death spirits, had not Apollo, for this last and uttermost time, stood by him close, and driven strength into him, and made his knees light? But brilliant Achilles kept shaking his head at his own people, and would not let them throw their bitter projectiles at Hector, for fear the thrower might win the glory and himself come second. So Hector will not allow any of the other Greeks to throw anything, or spears or anything like that at Hector, because then they would get the glory. But when, for the fourth time, they had come around to the well springs, then the father balanced his golden scales. These are the scales of Zeus. And, of course, he doesn't get to choose which direction they go. He just weighs them, and then he observes it. And in them he set two fateful portions of death, which lays men prostrate, one for Achilles, and one for Hector, breaker of horses, and balanced it by the middle. And Hector's death day was heavier, and dragged downward toward death, and Phoebus Apollo forsook him. But the goddess gray-eyed Athena came now to Pelion Achilles, and stood close beside him, and addressed him in winged words. Line 215. Beloved of Zeus, shining Achilles, I am hopeful now that you and I will take back a great glory to the ships of the Achaeans, after we have killed Hector, for all his slakeless fury for battle. Now there is no way for him to get clear away from us, not though Apollo, who strikes from afar, should be willing to undergo much and wallow before our father Zeus of the Aegis, even if Apollo would wallow and beg Zeus. Stand you here, then, and get your wind again, while I go to this man and persuade him to stand up to you in combat. So spoke Athena, and he was glad at heart and obeyed her, and stopped, and stood leaning on his bronze-barbed ash spear. Meanwhile, line 225, Athena left him there, and caught up with brilliant Hector, and likened herself in form and weariness, weariless voice, to Deiphobus. Now, Deiphobus is Hector's brother who was wounded, back in Book 13, lines 527-39. So we know Athena is cheering on Achilles. She says, why don't you stop here and catch your breath? Then she goes to Hector, and of course she's going to deceive him and trick him to assist Achilles. She came now and stood close to him and addressed him in winged words. Dear brother, indeed swift-footed Achilles is using you roughly and chasing you on swift feet around the city of Priam. Line 230. Come on, then. Let us stand fast against him and beat him back from us. And now poor Hector thinks that his brother has come out from the city to fight with him. Then tall Hector of the shining helm answered her, Deiphobus, before now you were dearest to me by far of my brothers, of all those who were sons of Priam and Hecabe, and now I'm minded all the more within my heart to honor you. You who dared for my sake, when your eyes saw me, to come forth from the fortifications while the others stand fast inside them. And so Athena is disguised as Deiphobus to convince Hector to stay outside the walls and fight, and Hector believes he has a comrade. Then in turn the goddess, gray-eyed Athena, answered him, My brother, it is true, our father and the lady our mother, taking my knees in turn, and my companions about me, entreated that I stay within. Such was the terror upon all of them. And so Athena lies, and as acting as Hector's brother says, "Yep, they all begged me to stay." Line 241. "But the heart within me was worn away by hard sorrow for you. I was worried. But now, let us go straight on and fight hard. Let there be no sparing of our spears, so that we can find out whether Achilles will kill us both and carry our bloody war spoils back to the hollow ships, or will himself go down under your spear." So Athena spoke, and led him on by beguilement. Now as the two in their advance were come close together, first of the two to speak was tall, helm-glittering Hector. "Son of Peleus," line 250, "I will no longer run from you. As before this I fled 3 times around the great city of Priam, and dared not stand to your onfall, but now my spirit in turn has driven me to stand and face you. I must take you now, or I must be taken. Come then, shall we swear before the gods? For these are the highest, who shall be witnesses and watch over our agreements. Brutal as you are, I will not defile you, if Zeus grants to me that I can wear you out and take the life from you. But after I've stripped your glorious armor, Achilles, I will give your corpse back to the Achaeans, the Greeks. Do you do likewise?" What kind of bargain is Hector making? "If I kill you, I'll strip your glorious armor, but I'll give your body back to the Greeks, and I want you to do likewise." Line 260. Then looking darkly at him, swift-footed Achilles answered, "Hector, argue me no agreements. I cannot forgive you. As there are no trustworthy oaths between men and lions, nor wolves and lambs have spirit that can be brought to agreement, but forever these hold feelings of hate for each other, so there can be no love between you and me, nor shall there be oaths between us, but one or the other must fall before then to glut with his blood Ares, the god who fights under the shield's guard. Remember every valor of yours, for now the need comes hardest upon you to be a spearman and a bold warrior. There shall be no more escape for you, but Pallas Athena will kill you soon by my spear. You will pay in a lump for all those sorrows of my companions you killed in your spear's fury." So he spoke, and balanced the spear far shattered and threw it. But glorious Hector kept his eyes on him and avoided it, for he dropped watchful to his knee, and the bronze spear flew over his shoulder and stuck in the ground. But Pallas Athena snatched it and gave it back to Achilles, unseen by Hector, shepherd of the people. But now Hector spoke out to the blameless son of Peleus. "You missed, and it was not, O Achilles, like the immortals from Zeus that you knew my destiny, but you thought so, or rather you are someone clever in speech and spoke to swindle me, to make me afraid of you and forget my valor and war strength. You will not stick your spear in my back as I run away from you, but drive it into my chest as I storm straight in against you. And if the god gives you that, and now look out for my brazen spear. I wish it might be taken full length in your body. And indeed, the war would be a lighter thing for the Trojans if you were dead, seeing that you are their greatest affliction." So he spoke, and balanced the spear far shadowed, and threw it, and struck the middle of Peleus's, Achilles, shield, nor missed it, line 290, but the spear was driven far back from the shield, and Hector was angered because his swift weapon had been loosed from his hand in a vain cast. He stood discouraged, and he had no other ash spear. But lifting his voice, he called aloud on Deiphobius of the pale shield, his brother, and asked him for a long spear. But Deiphobus was not near him. So he says to his brother, "Give me your spear there, brother." Line 295. But Deiphobus was not near him, and Hector knew the truth inside his heart, and spoke aloud, "No use. Here at last the gods have summoned me deathward. I thought Deiphobus, the hero, was here close beside me, and he is behind the wall, and it was Athena cheating me. And now evil death is close to me, and no longer far away." Line 300. "And there is no way out. So it must long since have been pleasing to Zeus and Zeus's son who strikes from afar this way, though before this they defended me gladly. But now my death is upon me. Let me at least not die without a struggle, inglorious, but do some big thing first, that men to come shall know of it." So what does he need to do? One of my commentaries says, "Having done some great deed for men yet to be born to hear." He wants to do something important first that people will remember and speak of later, so he will have Kleos. Line 306. So he spoke, and pulling out the sharp sword that was slung at the hollow of his side, huge and heavy, and gathering himself together, he made his swoop. like a high-flown eagle who launches himself out of the murk of the clouds on the flatland to catch away a tender lamb or a shivering hare, so Hector made his swoop, swinging his sharp sword, and Achilles charged, the heart within him loaded with savage fury. In front of his chest, the beautiful, elaborate great shield covered him, and with the glittering helm with four horns he nodded. The lovely gold fringes were shaken about it, which Hephaestus had driven close along the horn of the helmet. And, as a star moves among stars in the night's darkening, Hesper, this is Venus, who is the fairest star, who stands in the sky, such was the shining from the pointed spear Achilles was shaking in his right hand with evil intention toward brilliant Hector. He was eyeing Hector's splendid body to see where it might best give way, but all the rest of the skin was held in the armor, brazen and splendid. He stripped when he cut down the strength of Patroclus. Yet showed where the collar bones held the neck from the shoulders, the throat, where death of the soul comes most swiftly, in this place. Brilliant Achilles drove the spear as he came on in fury. So all Hector has is a sword. He has to get very close. Achilles can stand quite far away from Hector and kill him. He has a great advantage because he has a spear, which is much longer. Achilles drove the spear as he came on in fury, and clean through the soft part of the neck the spear point was driven. Yet the ash spear, heavy with bronze, did not sever the windpipe, so that Hector could still make exchange of words spoken. Line 330. But he dropped in the dust, and brilliant Achilles vaunted over him. Hector, surely you thought as you killed Patroclus you would be safe, and since I was far away you thought nothing of me, O fool. For an avenger was left, far greater than he was, behind him and away by the hollow ships. And it was I, and I have broken your strength. On you the dogs and the vultures shall feed and foully rip you. The Achaeans will bury Patroclus. In his weakness, Hector of the Shining Helm spoke to him. I entreat you, by your life, by your knees, by your parents, do not let the dogs feed on me by the ships of the Achaeans, but take yourself the bronze and gold that are there in abundance, those gifts that my father and the lady my mother will give you, and give my body to be taken home again, so that the Trojans and the wives of the Trojans may give me in death my right of burning. But looking darkly at him, swift-footed Achilles answered, line 345, no more entreating of me, you dog, by knees or parents. I wish only that my spirit and fury would drive me to hack your meat away and eat it raw for the things that you have done to me. So there is no one who can hold the dogs off from your head, not if they bring here and set before me 10 times and 20 times the ransom, and promise more in addition, not if Priam, son of Dardanus, should offer to weigh out your bulk in gold. Not even so shall the lady or mother who herself bore you lay you on the deathbed and mourn you. No, but the dogs and the birds will have you all for their feasting. Then dying, Hector of the Shining Helmet spoke to him. Line 356. I know you well as I look upon you. I know that I could not persuade you, since indeed in your breast is a heart of iron. Be careful now, for I might be made into the god's curse upon you on that day when Paris and Phoebus Apollo destroy you in the Scaean gates for all your valor. Here we have a prophecy. This is literally Hector prophesying. And what's he prophesying about? That Paris and Phoebus Apollo will destroy him, will destroy Achilles in the Scaean gates for all your valor. He spoke, and as he spoke, the end of death closed in upon him, and the soul, fluttering free of the limbs, went down into death's house, mourning her destiny, leaving youth and manhood behind her. Now, though he was a dead man, brilliant Achilles spoke to him. Line 365. So here's Achilles speaking to the corpse of Hector. Die, and I will take my own death at whatever time Zeus and the rest of the immortals choose to accomplish it. He spoke, and pulled the brazen spear from the body, and laid it on one side, and stripped away from the shoulders the bloody armor. And the other sons of the Achaeans came running about him, and gazed upon the stature, and on the imposing beauty of Hector, and none stood beside him who did not stab him. And thus they would speak one to another, each looking at his neighbor. See now, Hector is much softer to handle than he was when he set the ships ablaze with the burning firebrand. We must now pause and think about the armor. Where did the armor come from that Hector is wearing? Where did Hector get it? And Achilles just stripped it from him. line 375. So as they stood beside him, they would speak and stab him. But now, when he had despoiled the body, swift-footed, brilliant Achilles stood among the Achaeans and addressed them in winged words. Friends, who are leaders of the Argives and keep their counsels, since the gods have granted me the killing of this man who has done us much damage, such as not all the others together have done, come, let us go in armor about the city to see if we can find out what purpose is in the Trojans, whether they will abandon their high city now that this man has fallen, or are minded to stay, though Hector lives no longer. Yet still, why does the heart within me debate on these things? Line 385. There is a dead man who lies by the ships, unwept, unburied, Patroclus, and I will not forget him, never so long as I remain among the living and my knees have their spring beneath me. And though the dead forget the dead in the house of Hades, even there I shall still remember my beloved companion. But now, you young men of the Achaeans, let us go back, singing a victory song to our hollow ships, and take this with us. We have won ourselves enormous fame. We have killed the great Hector, whom the Trojans glorified, as if he were a god in their city. He spoke, and now thought of shameful treatment for glorious Hector. Line 395. In both of his feet at the back, he made holes by the tendons in the space between ankle and heel, and drew thongs of oxhide through them, and fastened them to the chariot so as to let the head drag, and mounted the chariot, and lifted the glorious armor inside it, then whipped the horses to a run, and they winged their way unreluctant. A cloud of dust rose where Hector was dragged. His dark hair was falling about him, and all that head that was once so handsome was tumbled in the dust, since by this time Zeus had given him over to his enemies to be defiled in the land of his fathers. Line 405. So all his head was dragged in the dust, and now his mother tore out her hair and threw the shining veil far from her, and raised a great wail as she looked upon her son. And his father beloved groaned pitifully, and all his people about him were taken with wailing and lamentation all through the city. It was most like what would have happened if all lowering Ilion had been burning top to bottom in fire. His people could scarcely keep the old man in his impatience from storming out of the Dardanian gates. He implored them all and wallowed in the muck before them, calling on each man and naming him by his name. Give way, dear friends, and let me alone, though you care for me. Leave me to go out from the city and make my way to the ships of the Achaeans. So poor Priam, they're having to hold him back, is trying to get out of the city. I must be suppliant to this man, who is harsh and violent, and he might have respect for my age, and take pity upon it, since I am old, and his father also as old as I am, Peleus, who begot and reared him to be an affliction on the Trojans. He has given us most sorrow beyond all others, such as the number of my flowering sons he has cut down. But for all these I mourn not so much in spite of my sorrow, as for one Hector, and the sharp grief for him will carry me downward into death's house. I wish he had died in my arms. For that way we two, I myself and his mother, who bore him unhappy, might so have glutted ourselves with weeping for him in mourning. So he spoke in tears, and beside him mourned the citizens. Line 430. But the women of Troy, Hecabe led out the thronging chant of sorrow. Child, I'm wretched. What shall my life be in my sorrows now you are dead, who by day and in the night were my glory in the town, and to all of the Trojans and the women of Troy, a blessing throughout their city. They adored you as if you were a god, since in truth you were their high honor while you lived. Now death and fate have closed in upon you. So she spoke in tears, but the wife of Hector had not yet heard, for no sure messenger had come to her and told her how her husband had held his ground there outside the gates. But she was weaving a web in the inner room of the high house, line 440, a red folding robe and inworking elaborate figures, so she's doing embroidery. She called out through the house to her lovely-haired handmaidens to set a great cauldron over the fire so that there would be hot water for Hector's bath as he came back out of the fighting. Poor innocent, nor knew how, far from waters for bathing, line 445, Pallas Athena had cut him down at the hands of Achilles. She heard from the great bastion the noise of mourning and sorrow. Her limbs spun and the shuttle dropped from her hand to the ground. Then she called aloud to her lovely-haired handmaidens, "Come here, two of you come with me, so I can see what has happened." Line 450. I heard the voice of Hector's honored mother. Of within me my own heart rising beats in my mouth. My limbs under me are frozen. Surely some evil is near for the children of Priam.
May what I say come never close to my ear, yet dreadfully I fear that great Achilles might have cut off bold Hector alone, away from the city, and be driving him into the flatland, might put an end to that bitter pride of courage that always was on him, since he would never stay back where the men were in numbers, but break far out in front and give way in his fury to no man. So she spoke, line 460, and ran out of the house like a raving woman with pulsing heart, and her two handmaidens went along with her. But when she came to the bastion and where the men were gathered, she stopped staring on the wall, and she saw him being dragged in front of the city, and the running horses dragged him at random toward the hollow ships of the Achaeans, line 465. The darkness of night misted over the eyes of Andromache. She fell backward and gasped the life breath from her, and far off threw from her head the shining gear that ordered her headdress, the diadem and the cap and the holding band woven together, and the circlet which Aphrodite the Golden once had given her on that day when Hector of the Shining Helmet led her forth from the house of Eetion and gave numberless gifts to win her. That's the veil that she wore as a bride. And you notice that when Hecabe heard that Hector was dead, she also threw off her veil. This revealing her face, taking off her veil, is very symbolic for these women. No, nothing matters at this point. And about her stood thronging her husband's sisters and the wives of his brothers, and these, in her despair for death, held her up among them. But she, when she breathed again, the life was gathered into her, because she fainted, lifted her voice among the women of Troy in mourning, "Hector, I grieve for you. You and I were born to a single destiny. You in Troy in the house of Priam, and I in Thebe, underneath the timbered mount of Placus in the house of Eetion, who cared for me when I was little. Ill-fated he, I ill-starred. I wish he had never begotten me. Now you go down to the house of death in the secret places of the earth, and left me here behind in the sorrows of mourning, a widow in your house, and the boy is only a baby, line 485, who was born to you and me, the unfortunate. You cannot help him, Hector, any more, since you are dead, nor can he help you. Though he escaped the attack of the Achaeans with all its sorrows, yet all his days for your sake there will be hard work for him in sorrows, for others will take his lands away from him. The day of bereavement leaves a child with no age mates to befriend him. He bows his head before every man, because he'll be a slave. His cheeks are bewept. He goes needy, a boy among his father's companions, and tugs at this man by the mantle, that man by the tunic, and they pity him, and one gives him a tiny drink from a goblet, enough to moisten his lips, not enough to moisten his palate. But one whose parents are living beats him out of the banquet, hitting him with his fists, and in words also abuses him. Get out, you! Your father is not dining among us. And the boy goes away in tears to his widowed mother. Astyanax, line 500, this is Hector's son, who in days before on the knees of his father would eat only the marrow or the flesh of sheep that was fattest, and when sleep would come upon him and he was done with his plane, he would go to sleep in a bed, in the arms of his nurse, in a soft bed, with his heart given all its fill of luxury. Line 505, now with his dear father gone, he has much to suffer. He whom the Trojans have called Astyanax, lord of the city, since it was you alone who defended the gates and the long walls. But now, beside the curving ships, far away from your parents, the writhing worms will feed when the dogs have had enough of you. On your naked corpse, though in your house there is clothing laid up that is fine, textured, and pleasant, wrought by the hands of women. But all of these I will burn up in the fires blazing. When she speaks of the writhing worms feeding, when the dogs have had enough of you, in 509, on your naked corpse, this is Andromache and her realization. She knows the Greeks will not let her son live. She'll burn the garments rather than let the Greeks have him, because she will never have those to bury him in. But all of these I will burn up in the fires blazing, no use to you, since you will never be laid away in them, but in your honor, from the men of Troy and the Trojan women. So she spoke in tears, and the women joined in her mourning. And thus ends Book 22.